Off Top, Lift Every Voice and Sing was originally a poem written in 1900 to commemorate Abraham Lincoln's birthday. Play the music!
This is the Dominique Foxworth Show.
Welcome to the Dominique Foxworth Show. I got a I like a
Didn't know that one.
Yeah, it's Black National Anthem now, but yeah, it got repurposed and turned into a song, and you about to hear somebody sing it before the Super Bowl. I don't know who's singing it this year. Oh, Audra Day, I think. Lift Every Voice and Sing goes harder than the Star Spangled Banner.
It goes really hard.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. It's like a objectively more fun song and better song to sing and listen to. It's a setup. Who's singing the national anthem?
No idea.
Well.
We'll figure it out closer to the game.
They got a hard act to follow after Lift Every Voice and Sing.
I went through a big phase of reading Abraham Lincoln assassination books.
What a nerdy phase. I went to a phase of reading Abraham Lincoln assassination books.
I took a class in college.
I went through a phase of liking like construction trucks when I was little.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I was 23 when I did this, but because I took a Civil War literature class in college, and I was like, this is somewhat interesting reading period pieces. And I was like, but then I was like, wait a second. Let's read some Lincoln bios, and then they get addictive because they're not all the same. There's like a lot of speculation about his life and stuff that goes into it. Yeah, interesting.
Wasn't
topic.
He a vampire in a movie something recently?
Probably.
Yeah, it's gotten too far. How far away of an American hero's death do you have to be before you can turn him into a vampire? That's ridiculous. Like, I feel like that's completely absurd. Oh, football. Let's talk about it.
I just got a notification. Reba McEntire is singing the anthem, but guess who's singing America the Beautiful?
Oh, I know who this is. It's the white rapper.
Post Malone.
Yeah, Iverson.
Yeah.
I can't wait.
I love it.
It's going to be great.
I love it.
Super Bowl. Hopefully The Rock comes out and walks on the field and does. You remember that when he started Super Bowl? That was so, like, no disrespect to The Rock. He's great. He can do everything. It seemed so unnecessary and also didn't hype. The players were on the field, Charlie.
George Kittle would get hyped up if The Rock did that. Guaranteed. But
we didn't give it as much time as it deserved at the moment. The players were on the field preparing to do a kickoff that was likely not going to be returned because no kickoffs are returned. But the game is about to start, and The Rock is walking around in and out of the line.
He's like, just rocking.
Just trying to get people hyped up for a game that, of course, they're hyped up for. It just would be weird for me to be on kickoff team or kickoff return. It's like, you get this field when you play?
I'm putting a prediction out now. Might not be next year, might not be the year after, but at some point when Travis Kelce, who's the heir to The Rock, when he retires and he takes all of The Rock's roles in movies, he will do that at a Super Bowl. He will come out and do that.
I can't wait for it. All right, well, we have plenty of time to talk Super Bowl, so we'll get to that later. But we got some actually interesting off-season news. Like, we got the Jets happening. We got our hometown team getting a coach. I don't know the proper verb, like landing, accepting is probably the right word, receiving Dan Quinn as their head coach, because it certainly does not seem in the like most celebrated coaching free agent class in football history. They end up with Dan Quinn, who is not the top of anybody's list.
I'm glad we had a little bit of fun off the top of the podcast because I am sad. The thing that I feel about this Dan Quinn hire is, what does it say about the organization that they ended up with their last resort coach? They had Ben Johnson, turned them down while the plane was in the air because he wanted to stay in Detroit and win a Super Bowl. They didn't get Slowick or the Texans quarterback coach, who presumably would have come with him and been the offensive coordinator. They couldn't have gotten Vrabel. I guess Vrabel doesn't want to go there. I thought this was supposed to be an appealing job. This is like, you're going to have Drake May or Jaden Daniels, who's going to be on a cost control contract. You're going to have new ownership that's patient, potentially a new stadium, potentially a new team name. Things were looking up, and then we were just the same old Commanders. We hired Ron Rivera again.
I hope not. They went and got, if you remember, before they hired anybody, they went and got, was it Bob Myers?
From and Spielman.
Yeah, and Rick Spielman, and they put together a team to find the heir apparent to this organization. And I think, having not been on the inside, what I imagine went wrong, and this is something that I don't think we talk about much, is you have to understand that the head coach and the general manager need to be fully aligned. And I think coaches really recognize that now more than ever. And if a coach has power. The thing that you can't do is hire the GM. I think you hire the, I guess, the tone setter, the organization changer. You hire that person first, and you hope that they already know who they want. And you trust them to hire the GM that they want to go along with them or the head coach that they want to go along with them. But it didn't feel like that's exactly what happened, because if that were the case, they probably would have ended up with Bobby Slowick or somebody like that who's... go ahead.
That's the one. I mean, you hire Adam Peters from San Francisco, and if you don't get Ben Johnson, you assume you get Bobby Slowick, who is from that Shanahan San Francisco coaching tree.
Yeah. But, I mean, I guess Bobby Slowick is very young.
It's either a home run hire or it's an implosion.
Yeah, the Shanahan Slowick relationship goes back really far, because I was there when Mike Shanahan and Bob Slowick Sr., I guess, was my defensive coordinator and DB coach back in San Francisco. Yes, this is a nepotism business, which doesn't mean that they're not very good, but we don't have to spend a ton of time on this in the second day of Black History Month, but we got a couple black coaches hired. Right off the bat, they got us out the way quick. Then Raheem came in and stole Bill Belichick's job in Atlanta. That was fantastic. And I know this may not make it to a lot of other podcasts, but I feel obligated to shout out my man from this area. He went to DeMatha. My main man, Denard Day-Day Wilson, is the coordinator of Tennessee. So we're officially a Tennessee Titans podcast until Denard gets his kicked, and we're going to act like we never knew him.
That's right.
But they win the Super Bowl. We were in there on the ground floor, baby. Go ahead, Denard and Callahan.
We'll be putting mayonnaise in our coffee and eating banana peels.
Oh, yeah. Will Levis.
So here's a question. Do you think that the Commanders should keep Eric Bieniemy now? Because they need someone who's a steward for the young quarterback they're bringing in.
That might have been part of the equation. I think that what Eric Bieniemy and Sam Howell did last year was okay. It was good. I think it was higher than we had expected for Sam Howell. Well, not higher than I expected. I thought Sam Howell was going to be good, if you remember some of my preseason predictions. And he was good when he was good, but he also could be incredibly bad. He just didn't have, like, a high floor. He could dip down at the bottom. And that was an issue that's not worth fighting through when you have a very high draft pick like they have now. But, yeah, Bieniemy seems like he should be a good steward. The reason why he still hasn't gotten a head coaching job is still beyond me, but he should be. If they can keep him, I think he's a good person to take over the offense, because Dan Quinn is a defensive-minded guy.
Yeah, I mean, unless he's going to go back to Kansas City, because Matt Nagy hasn't been that great, I assume he would stay.
Yeah.
Or maybe Quinn will bring in his own guy, but like the thing that's so frustrating about Dan Quinn is like the reason it's like Rivera had the great high when he had prime Cam Newton, and it's like you can't really mess this up. This dude's a force of nature.
Right.
And then with Dan Quinn in Atlanta, the thing that was so good about him was when he had Kyle Shanahan and prime Matt Ryan and prime Julio Jones and Roddy White, and the team was expected to be good because they had so much offensive talent, and Shanahan was overqualified to be an offensive coordinator at that point. And the only reason he had stayed an offensive coordinator was because of everything that had gone wrong with RG3 and how that ended so ignominiously. Like, if you look at that 2016 coaching staff, it was Dan Quinn, Raheem Morris, Kyle Shanahan, Matt LaFleur, and Mike McDaniel. So it's like it's really hard to parse out the success and give it to Dan Quinn. And obviously he's been a pretty good defensive coordinator in Dallas, but
they also have been incredibly talented in Dallas, and it's hard to be excited. And I, as our resident Washington Commanders fan, I can't imagine that the last showing from the defensive coordinator turned head coach that you have now was the Green Bay Packers essentially doing whatever they wanted from the beginning of that game to the end of that game on the defense of Dan Quinn. But I do think that this is not an instant turnaround. This is a blank slate. So they're not in the hole the way that you could say that some teams are. I guess like the Chargers come to mind. Even though the Chargers have a quarterback, they kind of have to dig themselves out of a contract hole or salary cap hole. You guys, the Commanders just are just kind of, blank slate.
Blank slate.
With the potential of a game-changing quarterback.
And more cap space than anyone in the league. And the thing is, when it's a blank slate, that's, I think, when you can raise your risk profile and try and take a coach that can grow into the job if you're really going to do a process-style build in the NFL. It's like the cap on Dan Quinn seems much lower than the cap on some offensive guy that could presumably turn into a Mike McDaniel type guy.
Yeah, I haven't heard the press conference, but I'm interested to hear what the sell is on to the fan base for Dan Quinn, because he's not somebody that they should be angry that shows up, but there's no real reason to be excited about it, which doesn't mean it's a good job. I mean, doesn't mean that he's going to do a bad job. But you brought up the staff that he was with before and the talent that was on the team and the staff when he was at the Super Bowl, almost won the Super Bowl. It's impossible for us at this distance, time-wise and not being inside the program, to be able to divvy up credit.
Yeah.
But since then,
yeah,
the success of the rest of the people that were there does not make it feel a ton like Dan Quinn was the architect of all of that, which, right. And I think this is an important point to make too. None of that may matter. As I bring up all the time, being a head coach is not being a coordinator. So right. We could point out that maybe he is not a great coordinator, but he was a good enough coach to get this close to the Super Bowl and almost win it.
See, I would still look at the other way. I thought he was a better defensive coordinator when he was in Seattle and Dallas than he was a head coach.
No, I agree. I agree wholeheartedly. But I'm saying coming off of what he's done in the Seattle thing, calling him a good defensive coordinator.
Again, yeah.
Yeah. So like call him a good defensive coordinator in Seattle is hard for me, not only because of the talent that he had there, but because the Seattle style was very, we do what we do. Like, I guess he was good at coaching fundamentals and coaching how to adjust to certain route concepts, but first down, second down, third down, you're going to be in cover three.
Yeah.
First and short, second and long, third and short, cover three. Like, he wasn't out there scheming up some new blitz packages. They had ends that could get after it and corners that could read and react. Yeah, that were huge and made the windows and the zones really small and could read and react quickly, but weren't like lockdown man-to-man corners, and they weren't like scheming up simulated pressures and coming from the other side. They lined their ass up in cover three and played it, and Cam Chancellor would knock people's heads off. That was essentially it. And Earl Thomas would cover more of the field than anyone, and Richard Sherman would make some plays, and it never felt to me like he was the innovative scheme guy.
Yeah, I mean, Earl Thomas playing cover three on and off the field.
Well played.
Yeah, so do you think they offered the job to Bill Belichick, or do you think they even thought about it? I don't think they interviewed, but do you think at that point, if you're going to go there, why not just call up Bill and be like, hey, Bill?
Yeah, it might have been too late at this point to go if they didn't knock on his door to start with, but I don't understand why everyone doesn't at least like call him and say, we'd like to interview you.
Right.
I mean, if nothing else, you could learn something and understand the way that he approaches things. But, I guess Bill Belichick probably not doing a whole bunch of interviews. I know they bill them as interviews in Atlanta, but you know what you're getting with Bill Belichick. I assume that you just offer him the job. When they were doing those interviews, it was probably more of them interviewing each other to see if it was a good fit, not to like find out if Bill Belichick knows how to be a head football coach.
So I'm looking now, and it looks like Rossini is reporting that, and she obviously has Washington ties, Washington sources, that he was considered, and then they went with Dan Quinn in the end. That is crazy to me.
I mean, I think it goes back to the first point that I was making. They hired a GM. And if you hire a GM, if the GM does not already have a coach in mind, it kind of has to be a package deal. It doesn't mean that it won't work out the other way, but especially if you want a high-profile GM or a high-profile coach, no one's just going to accept the situation as it is.
Yeah.
They want to succeed, and they have the power and leverage to build the organization, because that's the, I don't know, I don't want to rank relationships, but that is one of the most important relationships is the head coach needing to understand what his roster needs, the type of players that he wants, and having a GM who understands how to get that done and to time up their runs at championships. And if I'm trying to have a long, fruitful career, that's my first job, that's the most important thing. Yeah. If I'm just trying to get a cash grab, we go and see what happens, then I don't give a who the GM is.
Right. I mean, it seems like presumably we got a hot GM candidate here too, which is like Peter's like, they think he'll do a good job, but now it becomes slightly more complicated as you fit things in with a less exciting head coach. Can I feel better? Can we talk about the Jets dysfunction?
Oh, yeah. It's always nice to when you feel like you're at the bottom of the barrel, you can peek down. No, you're standing on someone, and you guys are standing on the New York Football Jets.
So this is Rossini Day on the podcast. It's
Shout
a bummer
out,
we
Diana.
We should have had Diana on the show for this, but she wrote a piece for The Athletic, or co-wrote a piece for The Athletic with Zach Rosenblatt about
Shout out Zach Rosenblatt. I'm sure he did some good work. He's not getting as much love as Diana. I should call Diana, get Zach's number.
Yeah.
We should have Rosenblatt on this joint.
Sure.
He sounds fun. Yeah. All right, we'll have Rosenblatt on. You think he'll be at the Super Bowl?
I don't know. Maybe. I
challenge Zach Rosenblatt to some pickleball at the Super Bowl.
Oh, yeah. We're going to put out, fans of this podcast, we're going to pump out a lot of content of pros versus Joes, me versus Dominique, and a lot of random activities around Vegas. And now we're saying it into the ether, so we actually have to do it.
Damn it. Now I actually have to do this shit. Yeah, we were just talking about it. All right. Anyway, back to the sadness that is the New York Jets.
Okay. So there's a lot in this piece. Mm-hmm. We found out that someone called Joe Douglas the assistant general manager to Aaron Rodgers.
Not just someone. It was an AFC general manager.
Yes.
So other GMs understand that Joe Douglas is the assistant GM.
Yes.
To Aaron Rodgers.
And that's because Aaron Rodgers paid $44 million for Alan Lazard, brought in Tim Boyle, brought in the corpse of Randall Cobb, tried to bring in David Bakhtiari, who actually probably would help quite a bit, amongst other things. Mercedes Lewis was on his wish list. Odell Beckham was on his wish list. You know, people who are not young, not investments that a lot of teams want to make. We found out that Robert Saleh was sort of paranoid, that Nate Hackett was not that competent this year.
And I mean, him not being competent is one thing.
Not his fault.
No, not even that. I'm certainly not caping up for Hackett.
Yeah.
That man who made me look silly when I said he was an up-and-coming general manager. I mean, up-and-coming offensive coordinator. But him being incompetent is not news. The more newsy part is that players on the team mm-hmm. believed him to be incompetent.
And almost coaches, immediately.
Yes. And coaches on the staff who worked for him believed him to be incompetent. A couple of notes from it was, yeah, like you mentioned, the players said they had never watched as little film as they had during that training camp. They didn't make adjustments to issues that they were having. Some of the coaches complained about how they would not have meetings with Hackett until damn near the day before the game, and they're still like adjusting the game plan. Some coaches asked for more support for their players. I think it was Micah Parsons was coming into town, asked for a better protection scheme for that. Nathaniel Hackett ignored that, and Micah Parsons went the hell off. It was a bit of a mess. And
yeah.
Another thing that jumped out to me in that story that I think the thing that runs through all of this to me, at least, is Aaron Rodgers, obviously.
Yes. Agent of chaos.
Yeah, and he is an agent of chaos, but I don't know what the proper analogy is, but he's like a cool agent of chaos because it appears that he's like an agent of like calm also. And maybe it's just like he's the only key that can open this lock. And because everyone there seems to still believe that if Aaron, all the way down to like Garrett Wilson, if Aaron Rodgers is healthy and okay, everything would have been all right.
I thought the Garrett Wilson quotes were wild, though. Basically, it can't be like this again.
Yes. He's
been in the NFL for 2 years.
And he was saying, like, it looks so much, the longing that he had in his quotes about, it looks so much easier when they do it, talking about other offenses in football. But the Aaron Rodgers thing is interesting to me because much of the story talks about how much faith they have in Aaron and how much responsibility they've given to Aaron and how much faith the players have in Aaron, but also how much he messed things up. And one of the things that jumped out, aside from him being the assistant GM, was he would go to California to rehab there or whatever and then parachute in on game days and be on the headsets, actually like as involved in play calling as Nathaniel Hackett was. And it just feels like you handed over the keys to your organization to someone who believes that they are capable of doing all these things, but is actually not.
Yeah, I mean, so I get why they think it could have been better. It could have been easier with Aaron Rodgers. Obviously, he's way better than Zach Wilson and Tim Boyle and Trevor Siemian. But and this is a huge but. And also, they're probably looking at the AFC playoff picture being like, well, the Chiefs' offense wasn't that great this year, and they were led by a good defense. Like, that this was much more wide open than we thought if the Ravens were able to be taken down.
Sure.
Who knows how good we could have been in the postseason. But the big but to this is, like, we're talking about a quarterback who actually, like, and you can say what you want. We can say what we want about how the playoffs are a small sample, but he actually hasn't been that relevant of a playoff quarterback in like a decade. And he's had these excellent regular season runs, but he's now going to be 40 years old, coming off an Achilles. And when I read a piece like this, this is interesting how you think it's like it might be solved with Aaron Rodgers. When there's a hit piece like this, I think it's over for all of them there.
Oh,
yeah.
No. I'm sorry if you got the misunderstanding. What I was saying was they believe that it could be solved by Aaron Rodgers. And also, it felt better when Aaron Rodgers was there to all of us. Like, the beginning of this season, we thought it was a possibility. It wasn't a foregone conclusion, but we thought they would be there at the end. I agree with you. I had this conversation with Greeny on Get Up a couple days ago. I said they're not making the playoffs. I think it's over for this group. And Robert Saleh, the stuff in there about Robert Saleh, like, he was painted in a light that was so ugly and paranoid and forcing people to wear good vibes t-shirts because that was the only way to try to change the positive, and like doing his own research in order to defend himself by saying all the other coaches who lost their quarterbacks stink too. It just was a bad look, and the fact that some of these voices are coming from inside is really, really bad. And I think we've had conversations about the way that Jerry Jones runs his team, but Woody Johnson is culpable also.
Yeah,
because this is a quick fix style where he's like, oh, we get Brett Favre, everything will be okay. Oh, we get Aaron Rodgers, everything will be okay. And it's not. And apparently he goes on Twitter regularly and brings the opinions that he's learned from reading tweets at him. He brings them to Robert Saleh. So it's
we know people like that.
Absolutely. But the challenging thing about digesting this story for me, at least, is there are no heroes. Like, I don't feel sorry for anyone. I don't go ahead.
Do you think any of them survive after this year? Rodgers, Saleh, Hackett?
Oh, no, I mean, they don't get murdered if you mean literally survive, but I think they all live through the season, but I don't think any of them are back with the Jets. There's no reason to keep...
It's a psyop.
Yeah, there's no reason to keep Aaron Rodgers if they don't have success. And then, of course, there's no reason to keep Hackett, and you got to blank slate it with Robert Saleh and get a brand new coach to lead this whole organization.
How do you unempower someone? Like, because they obviously gave too much power to Rodgers. You can't reset it. You can't reset it. If you fired Saleh, you couldn't reset it and have someone who comes in and is like, Aaron Rodgers, you're the 40-year-old quarterback. You need to prove to us that you can still be a good quarterback in this league. There's no market for you after this. Right. No one's going to, like, there's not going to be people lining up the way they were before for Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah. So that is a level of leadership that I'm not sure Woody Johnson or Joe Douglas has, and I'm not exactly sure how to go about it, because the only way to actually do that is you need Aaron Rodgers on board. You need to convince Aaron Rodgers that that's what's best for him.
Yes, or you don't worry about it.
No, yeah, I see what you're... No, I understand that that's a way to go about it, but that backfires, because the Aaron Rodgers that we've come to know is not one who, if you come in and say, look, all that stuff that we gave you before, we're taking it back. Mm-hmm. Now you're going to get treated like the rest of the players. You foresee that working well with this Aaron Rodgers?
No, but I almost wonder if it's just what's best for the team as a cultural reset.
Oh.
Because, like, and the thing is, what I think is you need a coach who's, like, willing to be the publicly. Like, Sean Payton got excoriated for how he treated Russell Wilson, how he treated the franchise. But I think we're going to look back and be like, he made the hard choice and he made himself the villain to live with it.
Yeah. I mean, I think that Sean Payton, I'm not going to try to celebrate Sean Payton being an could have done the things that he did,
of course,
without doing it in a way, but I get your point. Yeah. I think you're probably right. For the long-term future of this organization, someone is going to have to wrest power back into the traditional places. And I don't mind distributing the power to people that can handle it and people that could be responsible with it. I think that's when you're in the best place as a team. And this is my experience at the Ravens, was we were in a good place as an organization because the players kind of ran the show there. Yeah. And they were responsible players who understood what they were good at and understood how they could help and understood when it was time for them to step up and say, oh, you know what, coach? No, we're not practicing in pads again because it's going to be worse for us. Or, you know what, coach? This scheme is not going to be effective. But also recognize that sometimes when they disagreed with the coach, they had to shut up and they felt it was the right time to go back and say, nah, this is what we're doing, and pretend like they completely believed in it. Like, that's a perfect place to be in. It's a hard place to get to.
Right.
But I think the question that you're asking, to make it as to its simplest form, it's not, is that what the organization needs? It's the choice you're making is, do you want to give up on this season or not?
Yeah.
Right. So, like, they can't change whether Aaron Rodgers is in their building or is the quarterback of their team or not. Like, I guess they could cut him. But fundamentally, right now, their best chance of success is with Aaron Rodgers being all in and happy. So can you get him to all in and happy by this kind of threatening approach, or can you convince him in some way? Otherwise, you signed up for this. You signed a 2-year contract to be on board with this foolishness, and that's what you signed up for. You can't all of a sudden just flip it over. Like, this is the contract you signed up for.
Do we know it wouldn't work if there was a hard coach that told him, like, put him in line? Because, like, I feel like every coach has been kowtowing to Aaron Rodgers for a decade.
I think that it might have worked at some point. I think it's too late here and with the Jets. So maybe you could be right. I could be wrong. We can put some sort of, we don't have to put exact probabilities on it, but you think that what is a higher probability of success? Continuing on this season, this upcoming season, continuing with what they have and the structure that they have, where Aaron Rodgers has more power than anyone else and everyone treats him like God, or being a jerk to Aaron Rodgers?
Yeah. Oh, I don't know.
Okay, so that means I'm right. That's what people say when
I don't know. I'm just like, I can't psychologically analyze. Sometimes people, like, the bully needs to get punched in the mouth.
Agreed. But that's the point. I mean, that's what we're here for. I'm not asking you to accurately psychologically analyze them. I'm asking you what you would do in that position. What would you do?
I would quit. I would just be like, this is so this team is so
What if you could not afford to quit? Mortgage was coming in and you had a bunch of kids that had to go to school. You can't quit the job. You want to have success. How do you think that you have the best chance of keeping your job if you are in charge of all football operations? You're Woody Johnson's number two.
I would try and take away some of Aaron Rodgers' power. All right. We have not seen it work with him having a lot more and more power in, like, a really long time. And, like, the thing is, it's the last shot for him too. So, like, there has to be, he has to have some, I'm going to play ball here.
Right.
Otherwise, it's just not, like, people say that the hay's in the barn, the legacy's done, it's not.
No, I agree. I agree with you, and I agree that incentive exists. But when we talk about economics, we use the word rational, because we're talking, because if you have a group, a population of 10,000 people, then they will operate rationally. When you have a population of one person who has not shown that he operates rationally, you believe that you can walk into there and be like, look, Aaron, quit all the
that hired Bill Belichick.
Buckle up, Aaron. This is going to be a new sheriff in town. Things are different. Aaron Rodgers is not going to cooperate in the way that you think he is.
They got to hire Mike Singletary.
Yeah, they really want to lose.
I mean, they'll just, you know, show them what a pear looks like.
Yes, yeah, the great story.
The thing that I have one final question for you on Aaron Rodgers, and we should bleep this name in post. Is he more likely to make it to another conference championship or be hosting a podcast with
Why'd you say the name if they have to bleep it?
This will be a funny long bleep.
Well, you could have just said bleep yourself. Oh, then I wouldn't know who you're talking about. Yeah. All right. Was the question to go where or
conference host, championship? Conference, you know, his championship. Home, oh, losing the conference championship.
No, that's easy. He's gonna be sitting next to Brett Favre hosting a podcast with beep. I gave him a hint. That'll help him figure it out. What do you think? You think that Stephen A. would be a guest on that podcast?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, he probably would pass on it. But Stephen A. would be a guest on any podcast. I think he would be a guest on here if I asked him. But you know, I don't ask people.
I know. One day.
I hate doing it. Anyway. We have the live show coming up. That's going to be awesome. In Vegas, lots of sports media people have reached out so they can get free tickets. Pay for your tickets like everybody else.
We got a text from a friend being like, hey, can I get tickets to the live show? And Dominique was like, I got to try and find the link. I was like, yeah, I'll just send it. I'll put you on the link.
No. We will not tell who the friend was, but the friend was doing some coy. He was like, hey, is your show sold out? Hey, and I was like, I don't know. I'll give you the link. Check it out. But if you wanted some free tickets, say, hey, can I get the hookup? And I would have said, yeah, because I got a text from somebody today. Hey, can I get the hookup? I was like, I'll tell Charlie, put you on the list, my dog. And that's it. We got to play coy with me. He ain't cute. Anyway, let's still talk to Bomani Jones. He's not the one.
Although he will be at the show.
He will be?
Yeah.
Oh, cool. Bo will be at the show, guys. Come mess with him. Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and tequila season. Hypnotic liqueur. Barnstown, Kentucky. 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Swimsuit, check. Sunscreen, check. Phone charger, check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or in a carry-on. And the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
All right, my man Bobani Jones has been kind enough to join us. There's a few things going on in sports right now that I thought it'd be more appropriate to talk to Bobani about. We talked about a little bit of it with the Lamar Jackson reaction on his podcast, where you guys already know about it. But if you don't, go ahead and get it the right time. Download, rate, review, and go listen to that also. But I think we came to a good point on why. Or at least for me, I came to you, I think, with more of a question. Am I being crazy and hypersensitive about the way that people react to Lamar Jackson? Or is there some reaction around Lamar Jackson that seems unfair? And to be clear, it feels unfair to me, at least, in part because Lamar Jackson is not just a black quarterback, but he's a different quarterback in the way that he looks, in the way that he plays, in the way that he sounds at the podium. All that stuff felt like something that needed to be protected in a way that Lamar, I'm sure, doesn't feel like he needs protection. But it's not about protecting him as much as it's like protecting the concept for the next player that's coming. And that is not a protection that it feels like a bunch of other quarterbacks need at this point. So where did we end on that? What do you think, Bomani?
I mean, I think we ended with people really want to be right. And if you felt a certain way about Lamar, they not giving it up. I think people think that you and I really want to be right about Josh Allen, and we not giving it up. And we're like, no, yeah. We actually gave up on a lot of this a long time ago. It's just that we not still fighting the fight. So when he does something ridiculous, we can say he did something ridiculous, but not have to like denigrate him completely. But there's a whole bunch of people out here that can't make themselves just say he did something ridiculous because they want to be right. Right. And I think that that's what has happened in large part with Lamar, is that like even Bill Polian, it's clear he was so wrong, but he still want to be right. Crazy, he still want to be right. It's just a lot of people that still want to be right. And so when there's a moment, it's going to happen, and it happens in the biggest moments. It seems that it comes up the most. And I think the part that people aren't talking about nearly enough to me when it comes to him is that he seems to get in his own head. And that is, I actually think, is really interesting and something to explore, but people are just going at it big and lazy. Oh, so he's just not a good enough passer. I mean, damn, what kind of, like, what exactly are you looking for out of him? Josh Allen was a great one after a game. He had less than 5 yards in attempt. Right. So like, yeah, how much
I think
of this
the
are we
wanting to be
for?
Right thing is important, or is probably the right answer to this. But how did they end up on their original opinion, I guess, is the part where I think race plays some factor. But I don't know that it matters going forward, but it matters about like that position going forward. If someone else, and Lamar, I think, has played well enough that some teams will be open to the idea of a quarterback that's like Lamar going forward and should look for one, because I think the floor is raised on your team. But winning a championship changes everything. And the guy who's won a bunch of championships and is probably going to be the person someone's going to win the next championship right now is Patrick Mahomes. And I don't know exactly how to talk about his blackness at this point, or even if it's important to talk about. It's always felt important to that position. The position no longer feels like there's a block on the door for black quarterbacks anymore. Not to say that we've reached post-racial quarterbacking, but it feels odd that there was a point where it felt like, and maybe again, this is just my hypersensitivity, there was a point when it felt like Patrick Mahomes was a black quarterback. Now it don't no more in the way that we talk about him, in the way that we, in the way that he's treated. I don't have a question as much as I just was wondering.
It's still important. I still think it matters. I just think it manifests itself in different ways because he's so good that there's just not really much room for you to throw shade, right? And so the shade comes up, and this is what we talked about a couple weeks ago. When the Chiefs win a game, but all you talk about is how well Josh Allen played, right? Patrick Mahomes leads a drive in 13 seconds that gets him on the board to take it to overtime, and all you talk about is how sad it was that Josh Allen didn't get another chance to get the ball back. No credit for the fact that the dude did that in the 13 seconds. Those are, I don't want to sound like one of the kids, but those feel a little bit like microaggressions, yeah. Right? Like it's, those are the things to me that come up when it comes to Mahomes, but he's been so hater proof in all these ways. And I mean, we didn't treat Russell Wilson with the same black quarterback lens on a number of levels. Also, I don't have the great answer for exactly why. Like there's a lot of stuff that comes down to it, but I found myself, and you tell me if I'm tripping here, I don't know how much you watched that quarterback thing on Netflix. Mm-hmm. I watched a little bit of it, but I watched enough to realize I had misunderstood what Patrick Mahomes' get down was. Like all that Kermit the Frog stuff or whatever else. Nah, Patrick Mahomes out there, y'all woke up the wrong and I'm like, oh, you more like your daddy than I thought.
Exactly.
My bad. I misunderstood what was going on here. Nah, man, it still matters with him because me and Mina, people got mad at us about this, but I do think that there's a level at which he is underrated. Yes, there are people like me who say he's the greatest quarterback that they've ever seen. That's cool. But I also still think there are a lot of people that don't want to get on board with what the level of greatness is. And just thinking he's the best quarterback in the league right now, he can still be underrated if you think that. I think
being the best quarterback in the league for one season or being the best quarterback in football because you do it a certain way is one level that he advanced past very quickly in his career. He is now in a different stage of his career where he's like, I can be what you need me to be. Oh, no Tyreek Hill? Cool. Oh, our offense, we don't have no receivers at all? Cool. Oh, Travis Kelce getting a little old? All right. Oh, we got a great defense? All right, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to lead them on two scoring drives at the beginning of this game against the best defense in all of the NFL, and then I'm going to let my defense take over, and y'all going to have to prove to me that you can score on this team because I'm not going to give you a chance. I'm not going to do no deep seven-step drops. I'm not going to do all no willy-nilly freaky passes trying to fit it into tight windows. We're going to just play and fine. We punt nine times? Cool. Punt it nine times. But the thing that we were celebrating, and I don't want to be the hater of the Ravens defense. They were great, but we were celebrating their defense in a way that I felt was a slight bit dishonest. Because tell me for a second right here, Bomani Jones, or anyone else who is listening, if the Ravens took the lead, you think Patrick Mahomes wasn't going to be able to take it back?
Right.
Y'all really thought? Right. Like, I once I showed up at that game, the first two drives, I was like, oh, them boys in trouble. They're in trouble. And then Patrick throttled it back. The defense got better, too.
Bruh, they got us. I mean, I had people talk about, well, you haven't seen Patrick do it without a great offensive coach.
He's
had Andy Reid the whole time. And I'm like, yo, but I'm like, I hear you, but we didn't feel that way about Andy Reid until Patrick Mahomes. We thought Andy Reid was a very good offensive coordinator, but did you think Andy Reid was going to be going to, like, when Patrick Mahomes became the quarterback, did you think that the genius of Andy Reid was going to get them to four Super Bowls? Did you think that?
All you got to do is watch the games, too. It's like he do the special stuff. And this is the stuff that we were talking about with Brock Purdy. While he's not Patrick Mahomes, obviously, he got the same mentality. He got the same mentality. He hasn't matured to Patrick Mahomes' level, but he's got that mentality that's like, it's not a mentality that's like, man, you know what's going to get here? Stand between the lines. I ain't going to make no mistakes. I'm not going to mess this up. You know what? I'm going to let them win it for me. Whether we think that Deebo Samuel and Trent Williams and Christian McCaffrey are winning it for Purdy or not, Purdy don't believe that, and Purdy know that he got to make a play, and Patrick Mahomes feels that way also, and watching him mature backwards in a way, because I've seen so many quarterbacks, and the only quarterbacks that are in his area for comparison are people like Brady, and Brady was, I don't want to make mistakes. If they need me to make a play, I'll try, and I'll probably make it. That's who he was. I'm going to rely on this defense early in his career until he matured into the player that he became. Patrick Mahomes did it backwards. He walked in the league MVP status. and then he was like, oh, okay, I can't do that right now. And then remember, we had that whole narrative for a couple weeks or for half a season where it's like, nah, they doing too high safeties. Patrick Mahomes can't take the top off the defense anymore. All right, let me go to the lab and figure this out. Let me solve this puzzle. That's what it is. This fool's solving all the puzzles. And it's not to take away from the coaches of the defense. Like, yes, you need that also and all the players around him. But what he's doing is it's special. And let's enjoy it.
Dude, yeah. What else does he have to do? Like, let's say they win this one, right? And I guess this also, by the way, speaks to how crazy the Tom Brady resume is, especially considering there's a 9-year chunk in the middle of that where Brady didn't win no Super Bowl, okay? Patrick Mahomes gets this one. He'll have 3 Super Bowls after 6 years as a starter. And as impressive as that is, Tom Brady had that. Right. Like that's something crazy to think about is the only reason that people can't just jump whole hog into Patrick Mahomes as the greatest quarterback they've ever seen is because he's not even halfway to Tom Brady in Super Bowls. That's where the Tom Brady thing gets nuts. But if you believe that Tom Brady is the greatest, then you have to acknowledge this part. At the same place in the development, Patrick Mahomes has caught him in the team success and is worlds better as an individual player.
One. And you could say that the game is different now, which you'd be right. Like, everybody's numbers are up compared to them. But, again, I watched those games. I watched the ones that Tom Brady was in. Nobody thought Tom Brady was this. Even when they were winning Super Bowls, no one was like, you know what? There go the greatest quarterback we ever seen. The credit was Bill Belichick. Bill Belichick shifted to this system with Tom Brady and built a great defense around him. No one believed that Tom Brady was the engine to that until later. They thought it's a special piece. This is nice. They can build around a young, cheap quarterback. This works out in a special way. And that's another thing. Patrick doing this without taking discounts. Patrick out here like, you know what? Okay, y'all not going to be able to get me the free agents I want? Fine. It don't matter. You know what you are going to do? And again, is daddy influence. You're going to give him that money that he deserves. So he, yep, you're damn
player.
Right. Baseball players ain't taking no discounts. Salary cap for who? For what? No, I do not respect your salary construct. I'm good. Give me everything I deserve.
Now, Brady's greatness is all paper greatness. And that's not to say he wasn't a good player, but when you're making the case for the greatness of Tom Brady, you're listing accomplishments. When you are making the case for the greatness of Patrick Mahomes, you're pressing play. I take it another step further. You want to see the greatness of Patrick Mahomes? Go watch Matthew Stafford. Because Matthew Stafford, as good as, look, I don't think Matthew Stafford's a Hall of Famer. I have, like, there's but so far I'm willing to go on how good Matthew Stafford has been. However, Matthew Stafford is the great value version of Patrick Mahomes. There's no way around that. And if you think that Matthew Stafford's a great player, that's cool. That great player is the great value version of the greatest.
That's perfectly put. The point about the resumes is you're right. For Tom Brady, you can show the drives against the Falcons, and you can show things later in his career that were really impressive. But what really blows your mind about Tom Brady is not the tape, even though he has some impressive feats. What blows your mind about Tom Brady is what's on paper when you drop all them rings on the table. And for Patrick Mahomes, what blows your mind is the tape. Turn on that tape and watch Patrick work. And you're like, oh, yeah, that is the best thing I've ever seen. And to do it without the mistakes is the most incredible part. And then to have success, because you're right. Like, you could argue, and people have made this argument about Stafford. He was doing the no-look passes first, and has the arm strength and accuracy and angles. Like, he was doing all that first. Them boys are losing, though. And I understand it was Detroit, and the situation wasn't better. But they was barely even making the playoffs. Like,
also, Stafford has some nerve. Like, you're not good enough to be bored. Like, you need to spice things up a little bit? Why?
That is
y'all
hilarious.
7-8.
Never mind. I was going to make an analogy that would be good for your show, but not good for mine. Anyway, it's been awful. You create your own analogies in your mind. That would have been awful, but this has been amazing. I appreciate you, Bomani Jones. I will see you in Vegas. Can't wait.
Yes, sir. Appreciate you.
Y'all know where to find them to get more of this fun conversation the right time, Bomani Jones.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads. He's so
good. How has Dominique been lately?
Bad or good?
Let's find out. This is Roses and Thorns.
Time for your favorite segment with my favorite person, Roses and Thorns, with my wife, Ashley. I like your hoodie. That's cool.
Thank you.
So fly. So young.
Thank you. I'll admit that I ordered this.
Is it a black designer?
You know,
it's Black History Month.
Happy Black History Month.
Yes. Welcome to Black History Month.
I realized today, day two, after I got dressed, that I'm not wearing a single black designer, which is sad.
Well, I
have
like
some black hair care products. Well, black people might not actually own them, but did you know Debrat has mousse?
you have Debrat mousse?
So CVS is
in
DC.
I don't really think of black or as Debrat as like
a hair icon. Apparently, yeah. She is. She has some braiding products, so I could see the more.
She did always have braids.
But there was also like non-braiding related mousse, and so CVS is in DC. Unfortunately, all across neighborhoods are getting like ransacked, so they're not filling their shelves.
They probably not ransacked. They probably making.
They're just
up.
Lying, yeah. They're not filling their shelves as well, and people complain about it all the time. And today's the first time I really felt it because I was like, are y'all serious? The only mousse in this whole damn CVS is Debrat, and I just really wanted some mousse. So
it's not in the back? You can't just ask them to go to the back?
The shelves looked very empty.
Oh, okay. Well, Debrat mousse. That's hilarious. Well, it is Black History Month, and you are not celebrating with your clothes, but I believe in my... I was going to defend you, because I feel like Black History Month ain't for black people. Like, I feel like the point of Black History Month is... I mean, I guess to some degree, the reason why I came to...
Say the craziest.
I say crazy.
Go ahead.
How's it crazy?
No, I know what you mean, but it's just funny to hear you. Like, I
think at this point, and it happens a lot through like school emails, where like the responsibility to come in and like do additions to the Black History curriculum that they already have falls on the black parents, which like I get.
I mean, but we're talking about schools like our kids' school, like schools like our kids are in a private school.
Oh yeah, I'm talking about me. I care about me.
Yeah, like there are plenty of schools where there are a bunch of black kids, or where there are no black kids. Like, and these things aren't happening there.
They're being legislated out of some places.
I know, right? You're right. I see what you mean, and that like it's not for black people, but also it is for us, and that like it's important that people understand our history, including
and we
ourselves.
Understand our history, yeah.
Yeah. And like, and I don't know, when I was little, and maybe it's I was in different schools. Like, I remember my sister was, I was too young when we transferred out of this school, but Lauren was the queen of like, it was like a spelling bee, but Black History Facts.
Because you guys just watch Eyes on the Prize.
Oh my God, I loved. But also, like, she would study for it. Like, kids study for a spelling bee so she could kill it. And so because of her, even though I was too young, I would learn all the facts. And like, facts are one thing, but then as you get older, I think when you're young, it's nice to read all the stories. Like, I was going through my son's books in his room. He's about to be 11, and making room for more of the books he like actually still reads, and pulled out a lot of the ones that like I've been like slow to let go of and still have not taken out of our house. They're just in a pile to move out of his bookshelves, but the really good like Black History picture books. There are so many that I think that our kids, I'm so grateful that our kids have been exposed to, and I think that all kids should be exposed to, because like it's one thing knowing facts, but it's another thing knowing stories, like as you kind of grow, but then also really understanding like the why of things.
Emmy forced me to read her Jackie Joyner Kersee book last night.
I didn't even know he had that one. You can buy them all. Everyone I see, I'm like, black person, I'm getting you.
Yeah,
I love books.
And yeah, Declan, I read him some stuff last night when it was bedtime that was about World War II, actually, but it was about black people in World War II. But so, yeah, I mean, I'm half joking. I'm all the way joking about Black History Month isn't for black people. But I do often feel like, and maybe it's like I grew up from the time I was a little baby till eighth grade in like all black communities. Ninth grade, I went to like a half and half school. And then you go to Maryland PWC. And then
you said half and half, I was thinking like halfway house. And I was like, oh, I don't remember hearing before.
It was like half racially balanced. Everybody school. Was broke, but it was half black people, half white people. Mm-hmm. And then you go off into the world and college, everything else, and it's more and more white people. And I find like the further I get away from the mostly black community, the more Black History Month and just black things in general feel like it's like my responsibility. Like I have to represent Black History Month to somebody. I have to answer the black history questions. When somebody do something weird in sports, some black thing happens weird in sports, I have to answer for that.
Yes. I celebrated Black History Month about an hour ago by... I washed my hair before I came here, and I had to wear a scarf to keep it down, and I was about to leave the house and take my scarf off. We live in like a white neighborhood, and I have no tints on my windows. And I left my scarf on. I said, you know what? I'm going to show the world, because I think some of it really is about black history, but then others is like just like it helps people understanding our history and learning about black people can and should help us to feel more comfortable in all the spaces, like including leaving our house with a scarf.
All the white ladies in our neighborhood gonna be having scarfs on next week. Just step it up to a house coat
all the time. Oh, yeah.
You got it. No, your pajamas are like kind of cute. So
they are.
They still are clearly pajamas, but
my children say to me my youngest says to me when she sees me wearing them, "Ooh, mommy, you look so nice." The little velour ones, and she tells her, "Where are you going tonight?" And I'm like, "Oh, baby."
It's because they have
just a bed. Isn't daddy lucky? They're not sexy.
They have pajama day at school, so she just thinks it's like pajama
day. She thinks it looks nice. It kind of honestly, they look like old juicy couture like velour sweatsuits. But anyway, I'm excited that it's Black History Month. I think I'm also just as excited though that it's, and this is like some people say like Black History Month shouldn't be the shortest month of the year. I'm fine with that. We get an extra day. We get the 29th this year. Happy leap year though.
Oh, man.
But I do feel like I really, really love Valentine's Day. And like I kind of like think it should be celebrated all month. The joy that I get from Valentine's
Day. Every holiday. So I pretend like Valentine's Day is like some special thing. Anytime to celebrate.
I'm not a big St. Patrick's Day fan. That said, I did get cocktail napkins for a bar in the shape of shamrocks when I was ordering Valentine's Day cocktail napkins. So no, I'm not a fan of every holiday. I'm not big on
You can't
St.
say I'm not
Day.
A fan of St. Patrick's Day. Who else of anyone in the world? What percentage of people in the world you think bought St. Patrick's Day cocktail napkins? You're a fan of St. Patrick's Day. You like themes. You're a big fan of theming. Okay.
But so, I'm not a fan of St. Patrick's Day.
You love St. Patrick's Day.
You know what I didn't buy this year? Any football-shaped napkins for Super Bowl weekend, because I thought we would be in Vegas. I wanted to be there supporting the Ravens for my son's birthday, but ultimately he decided that he didn't want to go if Lamar wasn't going to be there. And that's actually why I have this purple sweat. I have like a few extra purple things because I was gearing up for our trip to Super Bowl, and I liked it though, so I didn't return it. But I'm sad about that, and I don't know why. Like now it's kind of too late now that I know we're home. Actually, I guess it's not. I forgot there's a week off. You know what? I need to order football cocktail napkins for the Usher celebration, or maybe I'll get just you cocktail napkins because really,
Usher celebration.
I have a rose of the week. I'm just jumping to it.
All right, fine.
The rose of the week is for myself. That
Ooh, congratulations.
I am not going to just show up in Vegas anyway, because I don't know if y'all remember, but I was so serious on here like months ago when they announced Usher as the halftime act. Like, I'm sorry, but I need to go. I need to go. And I realize it's kind of silly because it's like, why would you go to a whole Super Bowl and they're expensive and travel all the way out there just to see the halftime act? Like, had the Ravens gone, I would have also been excited to see them, and my son certainly would have. But like, I can't go just to see Usher when I could like actually watch it at home and DVR, and I've seen Usher before, and he's probably gonna like tour or something eventually, and I could see him there. So my rose is that I made one sensible decision this week, and it was to not. And he already is there with the hotel room.
I didn't realize that was on the table. Once Declan decided that he didn't want to just go because of the Super Bowl, there was still a chance that you were just gonna go and he was gonna stay home.
See, and that's the thing. I would have been away on his birthday, and I would have felt kind of bad. I did play into my decision. I mean, do you have to be there every birthday? I was there the most important one. I was there pushing him into the world.
I'm with you. You're the one that loves birthdays. I'm surprised. They've had parties every single year. Every year. All three of them had parties. You don't need a party every year.
Have they, though? Or some years, they just have a couple friends spend the night.
That's a party. That's a party. It qualifies as a party. You have a sleepover party.
Where they just play dates, like... at other places, like the arcade.
It's all parties. Stop having parties. They're too old.
But yeah, so I don't know. I kind of sometimes feel like I wish Black History Month didn't have to compete with Love Month.
Oh. So would you decorate the house in kente cloth if it wasn't for the fact that
you love pink? I do have.
You can get some pink kente cloth fabric.
I have.
Black Love History Month.
I have. I put up a Valentine's tree 1 year and got on Etsy these like custom made sweethearts out of like plyboard or something. Like the little candies are really cute. And all the quotes for them are very intentionally like recognizable, even though some are kind of like you have to think about songs from Black quotes from Black love songs. So like Feenin is one of them. Instead of like Love You or whatever comes on the Sweethearts at CVS. So that was my nod to trying to bring the two together, perhaps.
It does I will have to admit one thing. And before you already gave the rose of the day, so we don't have a special way to end it. But I'll end it with this thing that I appreciate about our kids, especially our daughters. I love when you get annoyed at them for doing things that you do. It makes me so happy. It just brings joy. So last night, Emerson, our youngest, brings up a bunch of decorations. Valentine's
from my holiday closet.
A bunch of Valentine's decorations.
That I wasn't going to put out this year.
And starts decorating her room and all this gaudy Valentine's stuff.
So ugly.
And I walk by Ashley, and Ashley's like fuming, like she's just making the room look so ugly. Like, how do you think we all feel every other time of year when you decide that you need to decorate the whole house? And it just gave me so much joy to see her in there being annoyed by having the house filled or having one room filled with unnecessary Valentine's decorations. It was beautiful.
Back to your point, though, about pink kente cloth or how I could decorate for Black History Month. One thing about us is we don't have to. And like, so that's the thing. Like, you're right. We don't need Black History Month in the way, because like my kids are going to read the books about Black people all year round. And I hope I choose schools for them that will incorporate elements of like Black culture into the curriculum throughout the year. And Black history is taught. Maybe it's not taught every year, but like when American history is taught, it's Black history is a really big part. I mean, because it is a big part of that, right?
Yes.
Like, so I hope that, and obviously, of course, like we're going to be hailed in to read some books if we want to, or there are going to be, you know, more assemblies about Black stuff, perhaps in the month of February, which I get we can side eye, but also like I recognize like at some point, the reason we have Black History Month now is because at some point that wasn't happening. So like I wouldn't want to go back to a place where that's not happening. But our walls, they're already decorated for Black History Month. Yeah, we got all your Black, like literal Black history artifacts all over our walls. But also the pictures reflect like some of them, there's a whole room of just pictures. Like I've went to Framebridge and framed like a lot of our kids' art. So like their self-portraits
and all the artists in
and
the
whatnot.
House are Black
all
artists.
The artists, except for one.
Shout
there's
out
a,
Carter G. Woodson.
Except for one, there is the one that is not a Black artist is like a 3x3 photograph of Martin Luther King, one of his jail shots. And that's
actually
a white artist, but it's Martin Luther King picture. So we let that slide in.
We call it the photographer, the police photographer artist.
But the artist who made the collage or whatever it's called.
Not Pollock. What's the...
Not a triptych, but whatever. Anyway. So again, to your point, like, yes, we don't need it. I don't need to decorate for Black History Month because we're decorated for Black History Month, but we all need it.
Yes, we are Black History.
I have a question for you.
I was going to end on a like a after school special style.
Oh, you know what we can do? One of my favorite Black History. When I knew I loved my kids' school is when they taught them a poem, and Eloise Greenfield, who's a local DC poet who passed recently, she was like alive in my childhood.
A great
she
way taught. To end it.
But first, I have a question. You're off tops or whatever you call them this month. Are they all going to be Black History related?
Well, today's was.
Are they going to be all month?
I don't feel that it's my responsibility to. But yeah, I was planning on it, but now it feels like you're making me.
No, but here's the thing.
I thought
Mina can't. Mina can't knock him anymore because people can't knock Black History Facts. You might lose some listeners, but sorry, Mina, can't knock him because it's Black stuff.
She'll knock him anyway.
What is? Do you know the poem Harry Tubman?
I don't.
Oh my gosh.
It's not a poem. It's a rap. You want me to beatbox for you?
No. Now I just remembered it and I forgot.
Want me to look up the first couple words?
Harry
you need to get started?
Tubman. Was born a slave.
Don't deliver it trepidatiously.
What
deliver
is it? I'm so sad.
Thank you, Podville, for this wonderful studio. You're the best. Thanks, Charlie, Bomani, Megan, Serafina, Brian, Kevin, Cortez. All right.
Harriet Tubman.
Lift every voice.
Oh, you want to do that instead?
Go ahead.
And sing. Tell. Oh, no, I can't sing. in heaven. I can do all three verses though. So like y'all are gonna have to cut me off. Ring with the harmonies.
Gosh, that is not harmony.
This is the Dominique Foxworth Show.